Right now, let's turn to Acts 27. Talking about Paul and lots of water in this one.
I sent Paul everywhere there was water.
So I'll start reading a little bit, and then we'll get some other folks to help me read. In verse 1, and when it was decided that we should sail for Italy, who decided?
Luke.
But who decided that they should go?
I mean, he was before the governor.
Right. He was being sent. He's not just getting on a boat and going.
No.
They delivered Paul and some other prisoners to a centurion of the Augustan cohort named Julius, and embarking in a ship of Adramyttium, which was about to sail to the ports along the coast of Asia, we put to sea. And again, who's part of the we?
Aristarchus.
But who's writing this?
Luke.
We assume that Luke is the author. And because he is the author, he's traveling with his friend Paul. We went to sea accompanied by Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica. I like the way that they say it over there, so I'm going to say it that way.
How do they say Thessaloniki?
Well, Mother said when she was in Turkey, they said Thessalonica. So there's about 15 different ways to say it, I guess.
When we were there, they said Thessaloniki.
Well, we can say that too. The next day we put in at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him leave to go to his friends and be cared for. And putting to sea from there, we sailed under the lee of Cyprus because the winds were against us. And when we had sailed across the sea, which is off Sicilia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra in Lycia. And there the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing for Italy and put us on board. We sailed slowly for a number of days and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus. And as the wind did not allow us to go on, we sailed under the lee of Crete off Salome. Coasting along it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens, near which was the city of Lycia. So, they're on a boat, and Luke is there, and I never can't even think.
Aristarchus.
It doesn't come out right when I try to have it in my head. So, they've already got sailing difficulties. They're not going very well because the wind's against them. I handed you a little definition along the lee of, and simply because it's a sailing term, and it means to find a sheltered place, to go where the wind's not going to push you around. So the lee of a mountain or an island or a ship, to get behind something and be protected. And I just thought it was interesting. I think we all knew it, but I just thought it was good to have a definition to stare at us. Oh, and the crossword that I handed to Yvonne brought that for us. So if we have time at the end of the lesson. Here you are.
I wasn't sure. I didn't remember, but it's out of the King James Version, so I can't find the word.
Yes, there is a map.
That would not make sense.
Everybody has the map of Paul's
journey. And I do have the King James. I do have the answers to things like really cheap.
That's cool.
Thank you. And you should have this map in your packet.
Which is very helpful.
Yeah, I thought so. So, Paul was a... It says here, Paul was a diligent defender of Christ. And he teaches us a lot about how to approach people about Jesus. He started in Athens. He said, I see you're a very religious people. You even have this altar, this... idol for a god you don't know, but let me tell you who the god is that you don't know. Philippi, he answered the jailer's questions of fear with an answer, don't be afraid, we're here and here's why. So he took his opportunity and wasn't a one-size-fits-all preacher. He didn't go in and say, this is the way I teach. He found his audience, he found out what they needed to be able to hear successfully. And I'm not sure that we're as good at that as we need to be, because sometimes we think, okay, we have the truth, we just need to read to them and they'll know. And maybe not everybody's at that place yet where they can do that. So we have to find them. Does that mean we dilute the truth? Absolutely not. But we find the way that they can hear it. And Paul was very good at that. So he's on his way with Aristarchus. There we go. Laura, would you read Acts 19 and 29? And then Amy, would you read Acts 20 and verse 4? And I've got two more.
Okay, what do you think? Acts 19 and 29.
Sharon, Colossians 4:10. And Linda, Philemon 1:24. These are the other references we have to Aristarchus.
Okay, Acts 19:29. So the whole city was filled with confusion and rushed into the theater with one accord, having seized Gaius, Aristarchus, Macedonians, Paul's travel companions.
Okay, 20:4.
And he was accompanied by Doria, the son of Pyrrhus, and by Aristarchus and Secundus of Thessalonians, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timothy, and Tychius, and Trophimus of Asia.
Sure.
Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, greet you, and Mark, the cousin of Barnabas. Concerning whom you've received instructions, if he comes to you, welcome him.
And then Philemon.
Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Christ Jesus, greet you, as do... Oh, that was 23. I'm sorry. As do Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, Luke, my fellow laborers.
Okay, so Aristarchus was with him many times, and it appears that he was on this trip, perhaps not yet a prisoner, but it's hard to know when he became. I mean, in one, he's talking about a prisoner in Christ, and that could be just... a turn of phrase about how he's given his life over to Christ, but there are other times that he says, my fellow prisoner. And so we know at some point Aristarchus was also a prisoner. But maybe not just yet, but it's hard to tell. But he was on the ship. So when Paul was shipped off to Rome, number one, who else was on that boat?
Laura Starkus.
Aristarchus was on the boat. Who else?
Other prisoners.
Other prisoners?
Yeah. Luke,
we assume.
Julius. And I guess all the crew.
Yeah. And later it asks this question in the lesson, but it seems to be appropriate to say it here. How many people were aboard that ship?
276.
That's a lot of people on boat.
And I think we forget that sometimes. We kind of... We've seen so many pictures of these little fishing boats, you know, and that people have drawn, that we forget this was a major cargo ship.
Right, somewhere it said that the boat probably was carrying wheat, mm-hmm. probably about 3,000 tons or something. I mean, it was a big amount.
Well, I don't know how many tons, but probably they can calculate from the number of people that were on board, how big this would have to have been. But we know it was wheat. We're told later that they tossed the wheat overboard. So we know it was a big cargo ship, had a lot of people on it, and that's kind of important to keep in mind in a little bit when we're talking about it. So who was in charge of that boat? He was in charge of all the people. But there was also a pilot of the boat, we learn later. And they didn't listen to Paul. So they, you know, he said he chose to listen to the owner of the boat. Mm-hmm. So the first island they passed, and I'm like, Mother, I kind of ran Paul several different places. By the time I got this, I think I got it all straight. Where was the first island that they passed and that they used for protection?
It was Cyprus.
And that's where they went under the lee of the island to be protected from the wind. And as we go to the map, there are a couple of things I'm not sure about on that. But we do know they traveled kind of in between Cyprus and the main, not island, landmass. Get my words out. And then they go on to where? Where did they change boats?
Myra.
And that's actually the one that had all that number of people in it. I'm just kind of making an assumption that they all got off that boat because that boat wasn't going to Rome anymore, and everybody got on the other one.
Question.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. When
Okay, in front of David says in the city of Lycia, but Lycia is not on here, and I'm trying to figure out what is that, like a little subdivision of it? I'm trying to figure out what, because it says, verse 5, came to Myra, a city of Lycia. What is
Lycia? Well, would port? Be a state.
Well, it says a city. Well,
no,
okay.
A city of.
Okay, I see.
Like Fort Worth's the city of Texas.
So that's the state. Okay, so that's
the state or the province or, you know, okay. Whatever the bigger okay. organization was. And I don't see it on our map.
I know, it shows here. Myra, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's here.
Is it? Oh, in there?
On the Great Sea, it's right.
Okay. So, oh, that actually has a lot of them. Okay.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So it's like north of Egypt. Anyway, you can't see my map.
I've discovered that it's impossible to get a map that has everything I want on it. Mm-hmm. I get the best map I can find, and then I find four things that it didn't.
You almost have to make your own.
Yeah, that didn't tell me
everything.
Okay, so they found a ship. He found the ship of Alexandria, and put people on that ship. I don't find that hard to imagine that they had different sized ships going to different places. So. This is really the one that has the wheat, this new one that they're on, and the 276 persons. So the first one could have been smaller. We don't really know. We know about the other one. We know the first one had Luke and Julius and Aristarchus and fellow prisoners. But the number really applies to the bigger ship where they got.
Well, you know, this day and time, we still have a lot of ships, and they take a lot of stuff. But at this time, shipping was the only way they had to move things from one part mm-hmm. of the world to the other, so it was a very important
somewhere I read it said something, I guess from the time they left the Egypt, that's where the wheat was, you know, that there was about three ships that they took before they got to Rome.
Hmm.
I don't know where I read that, somewhere.
Well, I read a book on Cleopatra, and it talked about when she would make her journeys, mm-hmm. hundreds of ships would go with her.
I can imagine that.
So.
It was a busy place,
mm-hmm.
the seas near the coastlines, and of course even crossing out in the, but especially along the coastlines as they delivered goods and services. Number 5, another island provided them shelter again. Which island and harbor did they reach there?
Fair Havens.
Well, the island of Crete and Fair Havens. And a little commentary here says it's still there, it's still called Fair Havens, and it's still a pretty important port receiving goods.
I'm trying to remember if I found it yesterday. I didn't mark it, but it says both boats followed the shoreline. Where does it say that?
I see that here in the writing in the papers, but I did not find that.
Okay, I was because I kept going to other places and I didn't see it, but I didn't know if I was.
I was actually going to ask the same question if
okay.
anybody found anything to back that statement up. But
maybe they meant the boat that they left on and then the boat that they got on.
Well, I think that's what they mean, but there's nothing in the Bible
yeah,
that tells
us that.
Yeah, because
they had to stay on the ship.
Yeah.
Because it's talking about Paul's, and that's what I was trying to figure out. I just didn't see it.
I think that may have been something Bonnie found in a commentary
okay.
and just accidentally said it as fact as opposed to the supposition.
Okay.
But I can't imagine why they would change ships if the other one's still going the same way. And I certainly didn't find anything that told me.
That's what I thought. I was like, if they're putting them on the other ship,
right?
Would it be okay?
So now we get into. Let's go down to verse 9. Let me read. As much time had been lost because the winds weren't with them, and the voyage was already dangerous because the fast had already gone by. Paul advised them, saying, "Sirs, I perceive that the voyage will be with injury and much loss, not only of the cargo and the ship." But also of our lives. Some pretty severe statements going on. Verse 11, but the centurion paid more attention to the captain and the owner of the ship than to what Paul said. Now, what can you envision this owner is saying?
Well, the ship is strong. Let's just go and... It's a money thing, too.
It's a money... Well, it's absolutely a money thing.
Well, he also doesn't want a ship ruined in the winter because it's not a big harbor there. So right. he wants to move the ship out of there to get it to a safer port.
And he wants to get the wheat to where he's going to sell it.
Right.
He doesn't necessarily care about the crew. It's the product, getting it there and making the money. That's his livelihood.
Well, he had no reason to believe Paul knew what he was talking about.
But the centurion seems to have had some reason to know who Paul was, because he treated him kindly and offered, you know, he said, yeah, I'll go see your friends. We're here in Crete, or in Cyprus. Which one? Cyprus. Go see your friends.
Yeah.
And like you said, Amy, because in verse 12, because the harbor was not suitable to winter, and the majority advised to put to sea from there on the chance that somehow they could reach, mine says Phoenix, it's Phoenice in the other translations, a harbor of Crete looking northeast and southeast, and winter there. It's not a good place for us to overwinter. We need to get on. It'll be okay. So, on verse 13, when the south wind blew gently, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, they weighed anchor and sailed along Crete, close inshore. But soon, a tempestuous wind called the Northeaster, and I think we still refer to those winds that way, Northeaster coming in, struck down from the land. And when the ship was caught and could not face the wind, we gave way to it and were driven. And running under the lee of a small island named Cauda, or Clauda in some versions, we managed with difficulty to secure the boat. After hoisting it up, they took measures to undergird the ship. Anybody know what that means?
Like gird up your loins? Mm-hmm. Go underneath it? You're securing the bottom.
Right.
With the chains or something.
Chains, like ropes, and planks to make it more stable. Then, fearing that they should run on the Syrtis, they lowered the gear and so were driven. And we were violently storm-tossed. They began next day to throw the cargo overboard. And the third day, they cast out with their own hands the tackle of the ship. This is the stuff they need to operate the ship. It's getting pretty desperate here. You know, cargo's one thing, but what you actually need to run the ship, and you're getting rid of it. Those winds must have been pretty violent by now. And they had been long without food. Remember, Paul said the fast had been going on. Paul then came forward and said, men, you should have listened to me, and you should not have set sail from Crete and incurred this injury and loss. I now bid you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, only of the ship. This very night there stood by me an angel of God, to whom I belong and whom I worship. And he said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And lo, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So take heart, men, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as I have been told. But we shall have to run on some island. So he's telling them, all right, it's going to be okay. Nobody's going to die. We're going to shipwreck. The boat's going to be gone. Now that can't have been terribly comforting, you know.
Because you're stuck.
Well, because you're not a believer in God. He's telling you there's going to be a shipwreck, but it's okay. It's got to...
Well, you're going to wreck in some turbulent seas.
Yeah.
So you know this is not
shipwreck.
Fun, even if you live.
Yeah, it's not like we're going to stop and everybody's going to get off. It's a shipwreck. So, when the 14th night had come, as we were drifting across the Sea of Adria, about midnight, the sailors suspected they were nearing land. So they sounded and found 20 fathoms, and a little farther on they sounded again and found 15. Now they're dropping things down into the water to see how close they're getting. And fearing that we might run on the rocks, they let out 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for the day to come. Please let it be light, so we can see what we're doing. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, and had lowered the boat into the sea, under pretense of laying out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion, the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. So the soldiers cut away the ropes of the boat and let it go. So,
we're starting to bleed.
The sailors are bailing. They're getting on the lifeboat. The soldiers cut the boat away so they can't do it. I'm not thinking the sailors said, oh, okay, we'll come back. They were thwarted in their efforts. So as the day was about to dawn, Paul urged them all to take some food, saying, today's the 14th day, that if you continued in suspense and without food, having taken nothing, therefore I urge you to take some food, it will give you strength, since not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you. And when he said this, he took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. So he's basically saying, you guys need to eat, I'm going to. And then they were all encouraged, and they ate some food. There were in all 276 persons in the ship. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the wheat into the sea. Imagine the owner's pretty upset right about now. He's been told he's going to lose his ship and everything in it.
I'm impressed that they listened to Paul and that they knew nothing of the Lord, you know. And he was just somebody on the ship.
Yeah, a prisoner at that.
Yeah.
You know, not anybody in charge.
But like last week we were talking about how soldiers are very superstitious. And Paul had already told them not to go or bad things were going to happen. Here they are out there, they didn't listen, bad things have happened.
Right.
So now maybe their superstition is playing a part in why they're
Could
saying,
be.
We need to listen to him or we're going to die.
Yeah, could be.
And plus, when you're feeling frantic, having someone who's
in charge,
control, who's calm, gives you a sense of purpose.
Mm-hmm. And I just think it's funny, they hadn't eaten all this time, so he starts eating in front of them. They're going, oh, yeah, I am hungry. I will eat something. So when it was day, they didn't recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach on which they planned, if possible, to bring the ship ashore. So they cast off the anchors and left them in the sea, at the same time loosening the ropes that tied the rudders. Then hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. But what did Paul tell them was going to happen?
I'm sure.
You're not going to get on that beach. Striking a shoal, they ran the vessel aground. The bow struck and remained immovable, and the stern was broken up by the surf. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their purpose. He ordered those who could swim to throw themselves overboard first and make for the land, and the rest on planks or on pieces of the ship. And so it was that Paul escaped to the land. Everybody out there. Swim if you can. If not, grab a board or something to float. So Luke goes back to first person here, and he says, after we had escaped, we then learned that the island was called Malta, and the natives showed us unusual kindness, for they kindled a fire and welcomed us all because it had begun to rain and was cold. Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and put them on the fire when a viper came out because of the heat and fastened on his hand. That makes me just cringe when I read that statement. When the natives saw the creature hanging from his hand, they said to one another, no doubt this man's a murderer. Though he's escaped from the sea, justice has not allowed him to live. However, he shook off the creature into the fire and suffered no harm. They waited, expecting him to swell up or suddenly fall down dead. But when they had waited for a long time and saw no misfortune come to him, they changed their minds and said that he was a god.
From the devil to God.
Yeah, he had been a murderer, and justice was being done, but didn't happen.
You can almost
so
see where they
God.
Would get that from, though, because
well,
everybody else would die.
It's hanging on his
yeah.
hand.
Yeah, it had fastened on it.
Fastened to him. He's shaking, and it won't come off. And while I know that Paul knew God was going to take care of him, I'm just sure that human reaction is to go, get that thing off me.
Yeah.
Now, in the neighborhood of that place were lands belonging to the chief men of the island named Publius, who received us and entertained us hospitably for 3 days. It happened that the father of Publius lay sick with fever and dysentery. Paul visited him and prayed, and putting his hands on him, healed him. And when this had taken place, the rest of the people on the island who had diseases also came and were cured. They presented many gifts to us, and when we sailed, they put on board whatever we needed. After 3 months, we set sail on a ship which had wintered in the island, a ship of Alexandria with the twin brothers as figurehead. Putting in at Syracuse, we stayed there for 3 days, and when we had made a circuit and arrived at Regium, and after 1 day a south wind sprang up, on the second day we came to Troas. There we found brethren, and were invited to stay with them for 7 days, and so we came to Rome. And the brethren there, when they heard of us, came as far as the Forum of Appius and 3 taverns to meet us. On seeing them, Paul thanked God and took courage. And when we came to Rome, Paul was allowed to stay by himself with the soldier that guarded him. Quite the adventure. And I, always in the back of my mind, I'm thinking how Paul knew what was ahead of him. He knew probably that Rome wasn't going to be, I'm not saying he could foretell all the future, but I doubt he thought it was going to really have a great outcome. You know, he had already been through a lot when he had to go with the, okay, I'm a Roman citizen, and I want to go before Caesar. All right, let's back up and catch some of our questions here. So number six, what warning did Paul issue to the centurion who's in charge of the prisoners?
It's not going to end well.
In disaster, in fact.
Yeah, a lot of loss.
Well, he was saying at first, the cargo, their lives,
right,
the ship,
everything. Yeah. So similar to what we call El Nino and La Nina, yeah, the Mediterranean Sea area had a winter wind called what?
You missed one.
Oh, did I? Yeah. So what did the ship owner decide to do?
Go ahead anyway.
Keep going. Okay, so what was the name of that wind that came?
Your Aquila.
Yeah, my one version said the northeasters. Yeah. The other one said that.
Mine says
the Euroclimus or
Euroquilla.
The wind that stirs up waves.
Yeah. This wind kept the ship from reaching the planned destination, driven into the open sea. How did the captain of the ship try to keep the ship from being torn apart? First of all, he headed for where? The lee of another island. Clauda.
Clauda.
Yeah. And then what did he do to the ship itself?
I wasn't sure. Throw the tackle over, is that what you were?
Well, first of all, he undergirded the ship.
Oh, okay.
Hold up. Yeah.
So after many days, number 10, of not seeing the sun or stars, Paul had another message. What did he tell them?
Listen to me. But again, somewhere I read it said that he wasn't really rebuking them or anything, that he was just trying to build up confidence in himself.
Let's see. I wonder, in this commentary by Clark, it says here when it was talking about the fast, it's generally allowed that the fast mentioned here was that of the Great Day of Atonement, which was always celebrated on the 10th day of the 7th month, which would answer to the latter end of our September. As this was about the time of the autumnal equinox, when the Mediterranean Sea was sufficiently tempestuous, we may suppose this feast was intended. To sail after this feast was dangerous among the ancient Jews. So that's a guess of which feast they were talking about, that was a feast and then a fast. Or maybe it's the other way around, a fast and then a feast. Yeah. And just why they hadn't eaten for 14 days. He said the fast is in place. He said it's been 14 days, but part of that 14 days was because he said you've been anxious and worried. So I don't know that we can pinpoint exactly what they were talking about.
Your verse 9 says the sea was sick and sailing was now dangerous because the fast was already over.
Well, and that's what he's talking about here, that after when that fast would have been on a calendar basis, that by then it was becoming winter. And not a good time. It's kind of like those rules we make that are by the calendar because they mean other things, you know.
But I thought the 14 days were white shoes, and we're already after they failed.
On
verse 27, they've talked about being out there for many days, and then it says, but when the 14th night came, as we were being driven about.
But so early on, it talks about the fast having already been in place, and then he talks about they didn't eat because they were anxious. So my point is, I don't know exactly how many days were involved in the fast and how many were just because they were very tense because the ship was blowing them all around and maybe seasick.
Verse 33.
Read it for me.
And as day was about to dawn, Paul implored them all to take food, saying, today is the 14th day you have waited and continued without food and eaten nothing.
Yeah.
So we do the fasting period?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Some of it, I think, might have been from the fasting period, and then part of it may be because it's saying you've continued in suspense. So maybe the fasting period, I did not look up the Day of Atonement to know how long the fast is, Carol.
I don't know.
Off your head. You know, it could be that that was a week, and then they had another week of just terror. Yeah. And, you know, if those waves are tossing around and that boat's going up and down, a whole lot of people can't eat when that's going on.
I never thought of it like that. Yeah.
Oh, food, yum.
Yeah. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking they were just so anxious they were fighting for their life.
And I'm sure that's part of it. But I just can't imagine that somebody out of those 276 people wasn't green. Somebody is bound to have been. I would have been.
Phew.
So,
green on our troop.
Question 11. How was their voyage going to end? What did Paul tell them?
The only thing lost was going to be the ship.
The ship.
They would all be
saved. They would all be okay. Okay.
But the ship would run aground on an island.
The ship would be lost, and they just needed to accept that.
Not just any island.
Yeah. So, we know that they were in the midst of the storm a couple of weeks because of that verse that Linda just read to us. And 276 people on the ship. Number 13, how did he encourage them to eat?
Well, that's how they were going to survive, too. That's how
for your survival.
He told them you need to eat. He thanked God for the food to remind them, because these are not believers, to remind them where this was coming from. And then he ate in front of them. And where did the ship run aground?
Well, between the two things, by Malta. I was going to say, I wasn't so sure exactly.
Yeah, but Malta's where they managed to get to. You know. And in chapter 28, verse 2, describe the way the island natives treated them.
Unusually kind.
Made a fire when they were cold and wet and scared.
I can't help but think that's divine. I just really, because here's these people coming, and a lot of people, and they're unusually kind.
Right. Which local man extended hospitality?
P-U-B-L-A.
And more, Paul displayed at least two miracles on Malta. What were they?
The vibrant healing. And he healed the father.
And then more.
Healed, yeah.
Because everybody else on the island who was ill came. And it's interesting to note that if this is Luke who's traveling with him and writing this, we don't hear anything about Luke the physician healing people. This was not the work of a man. This was God. This was divine healing. Because Luke wasn't saying, I'll take these six over here because I can make them better. And I thought that was just an interesting note in that. Yes, ma'am.
From what I'm reading, the Day of Atonement was a 24-hour period.
Ah, okay. So the fasting was over.
But it was considered very dangerous to travel after that period because you were heading into winter.
Right.
And dangerous storms.
Thank you. In this commentary on chapter 28, verse 1, he says, they knew that the island was called, in some translations, it's Melita, a Malta. It's about 50 miles from the coast of Sicily, 20 miles long, 12 miles at its greatest breadth, and about 60 miles in circumference. It is one immense rock of white, soft freestone with about 1 foot of depth of earth on average. And you get rock.
Oh.
It produces cotton, fruits, and fine honey, from which it appears the island originally had its name for Mele, in the genitive case, Melitos, signifying honey. Others suppose that it derived its name from the Phoenicians, who established a colony on it and made it a place of refuge when they extended their traffic to the ocean because it was furnished with excellent harbors. Hence, in their tongue, it would have been called Melita, escape or refuge. He says in verse 2 that the island was peopled by the Phoenicians or Carthaginians. Their ancient language was no doubt in use among them at that time, though mingled with Greek and Latin terms. This language would have been unintelligible to the Romans. With these, as well as with other nations, it was customary to call those barbarians whose language they did not understand. So basically he was saying, you know, they're not us, so they're barbarians, and they treated us unusually kindly. Maybe expecting to be met with weapons. I mean, if you have a very small island and it's yours and 276 people are coming along, you don't know what their intentions are. The venomous beast, he says, is a general name among Greek writers for serpents, vipers, scorpions, wasps, and such like creatures. The heathens had a general knowledge of retributive justice, and they thought that the stinging of the serpent was proof that Paul was a murderer.
I wonder why they think murderer could
be the worst thing you could be, I guess. The worst thing you could do.
Shows the superstitious kind of a thing, too.
I think
bad things happen to bad people.
I think we're all pretty guilty of that, don't you? We all want to believe that that's how it works, our human brain. If you're a bad person, bad things happen to you. If you're a good person,
only good things happen.
No, it doesn't work that way. And the Lord tells us it's not going to work that way. But I think that's a human part of us that would really like to believe that. And I think that's one of our struggles about understanding God's grace. Because we have this idea in our heads that justice means I've done good, I received good. And the Lord tells us that's not the way it works. And that His mercy extends to us and allows good things to happen to us. But I think that's kind of one of the things you'll hear people bargaining with God. If I do this, you know, if you'll do this for me, then I'll do. And it's, we don't have a bargaining chip.
Everything
God's,
that we have is from Him.
Everything we have, everything we are, everything we do is from God. And in His mercy, He looks at us and says, not perfect, but I'll help you. I'll help you get there.
That's a comforting thought.
It's a very comforting thought for me. We have a little bit of information about Malta that Bonnie put together for us. Talks about the various denominations that are there now. And I want to read one more, I think. No, I guess that was the only other reference I had that I wanted to read from him. Let's see, here's an interesting thing about Hercules. When he should have been swollen, when they're talking about Paul should have been swollen up and dying, said that he was a god. As Hercules was one of the gods of the Phoenicians and was worshipped in Malta under the epithet of the dispeller of evil, they probably thought that Paul was Hercules. And the more so because Hercules was famous for having destroyed in his youth two serpents that attacked him in his cradle. Interesting. So our last questions that we always ask, how does this lesson fit in with God's grand plan to bring salvation to the world through His Son?
While Paul was under, I kind of look at it, that water, there's a whole lot of water in the surf.
Yeah.
But he's still in control of it. He protected Paul, and it was a lesson in it all or whatever. He gave them the warning up front, which we have so many of them in the Bible. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what's going to happen,
right.
But people don't listen. And then he takes them to the point. And there was a punishment, I guess. There's a loss there, but yet they were all saved. So it had to, people, to, and even when the viper bit Paul and they thought he was a god, Paul's a great example because he could have taken that and just ran with it.
Sure.
But he doesn't. He knows his place.
Several opportunities to be elevated.
But it just shows you how that blows my mind, that he's in control of all that.
God's in control. And he continued to keep Paul on this earth past, I think, when Paul wanted to stay, because he was spreading the word in such an effective way and getting the word out. And that, you know, that's how we manage to have the gift of salvation, is because of these men who were continuing to preach the word, get the word out. So what lesson should Christians take away from this lesson?
Obedience.
That's a big one, I think.
Perseverance.
I think that it's almost, to me, it's a humility thing, because again, it's when the water, it doesn't matter how strong you are, you drop you in the middle of the ocean, you're not going to survive.
Right.
Unless.
You might survive for a little while, but you will not survive.
He's in control.
Right.
the Psalms, it talks about the fact that the Lord preserves those who are His. And even though Paul eventually dies, and you know, we know that, but he was preserved to complete his mission.
Right.
And, you know, I think about, and maybe this isn't a good time to bring this up, but I was close to New York City during 911. Mm-hmm. I lived 3.5 hours away from there. And so we were connected to the right. Christians who were involved, who, you know, worked at the Twin Towers, mm-hmm. and the Christians that were in D.C. in the mm-hmm. Pentagon, that the part that right. got hurt. And I can tell you something that gives me the chills every day when I talk about it. Not one Christian died that day.
Really?
They were on their way. They were running late. They were in a different part of the Pentagon because there was construction going on. There was, I mean, every single one was preserved. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
It is amazing. We have a purpose as Christians here on this earth to be spreading the word of God. And the Lord knows who we are.
Well, He tells us, I know the hairs of your head.
And it's never changing.
I clothe the lilies of the field. Clothe the lilies of the field. Why would you think I wouldn't take care of you? I mean, Matthew 6 is probably one of my favorite scriptures. I lived there for a long time when I was on my own. I just kept reading it. He knows, He cares, He's going to take care of us. So, but the obedience part is there, and Paul showed them, you know, because the very first time they're not going to pay attention, and there's a little warning in there. Do you think they would have all survived if those sailors had managed to get overboard? He said, you won't. So the soldiers took care of it.
That was interesting. Trust that He's going to do
what He says He will do.
In Psalm 31:23 is the reference that I just spoke of.
Mm-hmm. Well, all the things that God doesn't take out of our way, He gives us strength to bear through.
Right. And He doesn't promise us that He'll take everything out of our way.
No, no. He will never be strong.
That's right. Because what He did promise us is that He would take care of us if we trusted Him. All right. We didn't get to our crossword. Everybody has one to take home. So you need to do your crossword. See if you. And Yvonne said this came from the King James Version. So there may be a word or two that you have to figure out.
That one I was using the New King James. The word mentioned.
All right, ladies. Thank you so much.